All right. So again, my name is Jeff, and so today we're going to be talking about music theory, and it's kind of a weird subject in the sense that we're all going to be coming at it from different levels, I'm guessing. So what I want to do, I have some things I want to talk about and things we want to go over, and there's things that were in the course description that we want to cover, but I want to make sure that we can all start at a familiar place. Some of us that have more background might need to back up for a minute and just let other people catch up. Maybe we're all pretty advanced. Maybe we're all starting from the same spot. So just from a show of hands, how many people kind of have done the music theory thing, scales, chords, are familiar with? How many people, first time ever talking about music theory? Okay. How many people read music, out of curiosity? How many people, if I say like, how many guitar players or piano players?
Guitar.
Okay. If I say a C chord, people know that it's a C, E, and G, and can pick it on piano. And there's people that a C chord, and you're like, I have no idea, but I'll sing. If I hear the note, I'll sing it. You got any of those people? No? Okay. All right. Chase is a drummer, so he just hang out. But perfect. So what we're going to do is we're going to start with just kind of a basic understanding. Back up, just get a basic understanding of chords, the major and minor scales, and how things are related. And that's probably going to be the bulk of our focus for this first part is the relationship between scales and keys and chords, and then why that's useful and how that's useful. From there, we can launch into, I have an exercise in reharmonizing, which is pretty popular, taking like your favorite hymn or a song, maybe you've done Open the Eyes of My Heart 1,000 times the same way, and you're like, how can I breathe fresh life into this? We'll talk about how you can take the chords that are written, change them up, and where you can start to play around with some different chords, while keeping the exact same melody so your congregation doesn't get lost. And then we'll talk about some voice leading and arranging. If anybody, how many people that work with choirs or are in a choir or lead choirs, anybody? Okay, so there's some arranging techniques that we want to cover as well. I don't want those people to get lost. Okay, so who is here? I know I ask a lot of questions, just want to make sure I cover your needs. Who here is doing the worship leader thing out in front with guitar, piano, leading the bands during rehearsal or anything like that? Okay. One thing that's going to also, I think, might come in handy is learning how to transpose on the fly. I know capos come in real handy, but I'm a piano player, and I remember being in a worship band. Hello, those of you who just came in.
Hi, sorry.
No, that's fine. My name's Jeff. And I remember being in worship bands when I was younger, and all of a sudden singer be singing a song and she says, oh, it's too low or too high, and so the worship leader changes it, and I'm like, what do I do? Like, there's no transpose button on my keyboard to play the same chord, so then I have to read it up a half step or down a step or up a third or something like that. At the time, it was great practice, but it can be frustrating. There's people in your worship band that are relying on you or look to you if you change the chords or if you transpose the key, you may just slap on a capo and play the same chords and it sounds right, but they may be like, what are we doing? So we'll go over some techniques to do that, and I want to make sure there's time. Anything you need out of this class, then I want to make sure that we have time to answer questions and go over things that you might need specifically or there's a concern or an issue that you have. So let's talk about, first of all, major and minor scales and those tonalities and key signatures as well. So a scale, just to get on the same page, to define a scale is just a framework of tones, okay? And they all follow the same formula. So we have major scales and minor scales, and there are other scales, but those are the two biggies, major and minor, okay? And they're all going to follow the same framework, which means that no matter what note you start your scale on, if you follow a formula, you can find out, you can pick out the major and minor scale. All right. So a formula, for instance, of a major scale is, if I say whole steps and half steps, are we okay with that? Okay. So a formula of any major scale is going to be a whole step, half step, whole step, whole step, whole step, half step. So really, no matter what key you start on, if you follow that, you get a major scale. If I start on C, I go full step, half step, full step, full step, full step, half step. You can start on that's the framework for the major scale. All right, and there's a formula, and you can pick that out. Now, where this comes in handy is if you have a C major scale or any G major, E major, if you have any major scale, I find it helpful to think of the steps in the scale in terms of numbers. Okay, I'll quickly just draw this out for you. So, most we're doing worship, so I should probably keep everything in the key of G or E, right? For you? No, I'm just joking. Just jokes. Okay, so we'll keep C because there's no sharps or flats. Okay, so we have, those of you who read music, we have C, D, E, F, G, A, B, C. So that's our C major scale, and it follows the formula we just laid out. Now, if we start thinking in terms, skipping the letter names, we start thinking in terms of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. What you're going to start to see emerge is the relationships between these tones as we build chords on our scales. Okay, so we have triads, and the word triad is a three-note chord, like tricycle is three wheels. Triad is a three-note chord. Okay, so once we start building chords on top of it, you just pile a little snowman up there, and then we start making our chords. Now, it would take like weeks to go through some of this stuff as far as the theory behind it, but we're stacking thirds, which is an interval. But what you want to know is if you're playing piano or guitar, you're skipping every other note. You build your chords like that. Okay? So, what you find, and I have this on a handout, so I'm going to hand these out right now. I'm going to flip them over. I don't know. I'm glad a lot of people are seeing music theory. Everybody knows they're going to be. Genius. There you go. That's awesome. Okay. So if you look on the back, you can see there's a key of F, and it has this triads spread across them below your own Mary Had a Little, or Jesus Loves Me, and then below the Mary Had a Little Lamb, there's a 1 and G. Okay? So, and it has a chord named on top. So when you're talking about a G chord, those are the notes that are in a G chord. Okay? And when you're talking about a D chord, those are the notes that are in a D chord. And basically, they look just like this. What you find as you look at this laid out, you find that there are notes that these chords have in common. Okay? Those are called common tones. So, if we're looking at this line, which is G, so every note on this line is a G. The G above middle C. So, this first chord has a G in it. Another one. Another one. Now at this point, these have become some sort of like a family, okay? So if you find chords that have two in common, for instance, this one and this one have those two notes in common, then they're pretty closely related. If you have this chord and let's say this chord, not too many notes closely related, none. So they're not going to be as interchangeable as the other ones, okay? And what this is leading up to is understanding, again, the reharmonization process we're going to go through in a second. Okay. Am I losing everybody? Okay. So far, so good. Okay. Now, understanding the difference between major and minor chords, as we go up and we just built these chords, we what you have is you have some are major and some are minor, and you can hear that as you play them. Minor. Creepy minor. Happy major. Happy major. Creepy minor. Really creepy. Happy major. Okay? So, what happens is this, whenever you're dealing in any major key, if you're playing in the key of G, in the key of E, in the key of A flat, B flat, F, whatever it is, your home base chord is always a major one chord. If anybody, people talk about Roman numerals of chords with you guys at all, okay? So a lot of times, especially in classical music, what you'll find is that there'll be a major Roman numerals. Those will be in capital letters, all right? And the reason why they use Roman numerals is because that starts to transcend keys. So if I say, this is a C chord, and if I think of a song in terms of a C chord, and then an F chord and a G chord, so I'll play C, then F, then G, then back to C. Now all of a sudden someone says, oh, can we play that in the key of E flat? And you gotta think, well, let's get C, so I go up to E flat, and do that, and then I get F, and I gotta go up the same amount. And you have to kind of transpose on the spot. But if you think of Roman numerals, there's no letter names in Roman numerals. So it's a one chord to a four chord, because there's F, there's our F chord, to a five chord, back to a one chord. And then you can do that in any key. If you know your scale, E flat, A flat, B flat, E flat. Questions? So, what you have, when you have common tones, if you look at, turn the page over for a second, on the front of the page. When you talk about chords and how they're related, when you have a melody, I took Jesus Loves Me because that's a common melody that we all know. So, when you have... when you have a melody that you want to switch up a little bit, you can take the notes that are in there and find new chords that go with them, and it goes back to our idea of what's a common tone. Okay? So, from a reading music standpoint, if you look and you say, okay, that first note is a C, or if you can hear where that C is, so if you take that melody, and if you hear the traditional harmonies with it, you'll hear it's... Right? Okay, so that's kind of the way it's been harmonized. But if you take some different chords and put them with the melody, you have a great opportunity to kind of change it up a little bit. And the main question is, well, where do you start? How do you do that? What do you do? So, again, it goes back to common tones and knowing that when you have a note that can appear in more than one of these chords, then you can use one of those chords to play with it, to switch it up a little bit. So, if I have a melody note that starts on C or has a C in it, maybe you don't want to use a traditional C chord. Maybe you want to use an F chord or an A minor chord or something else that has a C in it. Okay? Now, even if you don't read music, you can do a lot of this by ear. So if you can, and that's just kind of playing around. Do you want to just kind of play around with different triads, different sort of chords, and see what sort of vision you're going for with the song, what kind of feel you're going for. The one thing that's kind of a bit of a danger is just being able to be sensitive to where the music wants to go. A lot of times what makes great melodies is because they have a certain, melodies have a certain sort of expectation to them. And when notes go places, they have kind of a desire to resolve or to go to another point. So how many singers do we have here? Singers? Okay, lots of them. So when you guys are singing a melody, you're pretty much singing what everyone knows. When you sing harmony, you have to pick out notes that match what the melody is doing, but then you can't just be like... You have to make your line a melody line as well. It's like a second melody. That's what they call like a counterpoint. Okay? So it's important when you're coming up with a harmony, it's important to listen and think, where does the note I'm singing or the note I'm playing, where does that want to go? If you're taking a guitar solo, or if you're taking a piano solo, or an organ solo, or a bass solo. Do we have any bass players? Yes. Okay. So, if you play up here? Down? Okay. So, that's all right. You do the stand-up bass? No, that's okay, too. Hey, man, I can't even play bass, so you're a step ahead of me. So when you're taking a solo, whether we're conscious of it or not, we're sensitive to where the notes are going, okay? If you listen to where notes want to go, it kind of opens up new doors of what is going on with the melody or the harmony or the solo you're taking. And I liken it to telling a story. I mean, I'm a big fan of music, and I'm a big fan of movies or television. I'm a big fan of following a story, whether it be a book or a screenplay or anything like that. And a lot of times we're drawn to music because it's going to take us somewhere and it's going to tell a story. All right. So when I teach private piano lessons. When I teach my kids, I say sometimes they're just reading note to note to note to note to note, and that's okay. But it's good to be aware of what you just played, what you're playing right now, and what you're about to play. Just like when I'm telling a story or when you're watching a movie, you have an awareness of what you just saw, or what you just heard, or what you just read. Or even if you're speaking and telling a story, you know what you just said, you know what you're saying right now, and you know what you're about to say. And it's somewhat subconscious, but you know what's going to happen. Okay? Otherwise, every word would have a big space between it, which happens to me all the time. But but even watching a movie, there's expectations that if you see something or if a plot starts to unfold, you can be like, okay, you can put pieces together. I know what just happened. I know what I'm seeing right now. I can expect something like this to happen. So I want you to listen to some of these tones when we look at this major scale. Listen to some of these tones and where they want to go. When you have in a major scale what they call the leading tone, it's the seventh step of the scale, or it's the note just below what they call tonic, or the name of the scale. So in the G scale, it's F sharp. In a C scale, it's B. It's a half step below the key that you're in. Okay, and that's called the leading tone. And a lot of people realize this, and they do it instinctively because it sounds good, because it's the way we're wired up to hear music in the Western world. But when we hear that... Now, if I just left, if I ended there and walked out of the room, you'd be like, wow, not a big fan. But we know that it needs to go somewhere. If that didn't have that urge or that pull to it, all of a sudden, we have no expectations for any music, really. Okay? So that's one example. We need to hear that resolution. Okay? We need to. Now, you can prolong it as long as you want if you listen to some of the great symphonies, some of the great pieces of music, Beethoven, Mozart. I mean, you can sit on that note. You can sit there as long as you want. But at some point, you have to go there. Okay? And if you don't, people throw tomatoes at you. They get upset. Okay? At least that's what I read. I've never experienced it. But at some point, you have to resolve that note. So when you're singing a harmony line, or you're playing a guitar solo, and you find yourself on that leading tone, in whatever scale you're using, or whatever chord you're working with, you find yourself on this seventh note, this leading tone, you can hear, wow, I'm on the leading tone. I should do something with it. And then you should do something with it, if you have that instinct. If you find yourself soloing, and you're like, I'm not doing this very well at all. You might use a different approach. But if you find yourself missing a bunch of notes, just be listening and find, okay, I'm playing a note but it really wants to go down or wants to go up. Here's an example of a note that wants to go down. It's the fourth step of the scale. And that fourth step of the scale loves to go back down to the third step of the scale in certain contexts. Take a listen. So if we do this, if I just do that, we're okay if I do this. That's fine. Or I can go. That's fine too. Right? There's no right or wrong. But when I put this note in the context of a different chord, it needs to go, right? It has to go down. Well, it doesn't have to, but people will love you if you do that. Okay? So there's a relationship between how that fourth note sits in one chord, and just in its own chord, it can go up. But when it sits in a different chord, in what we call a 5-7 chord, then you want to go down, okay? So we have a leading tone that wants to go up. We have a seventh of a chord, or the fourth tone, that wants to go down. And these are all tendencies that are pulling, or relationships that are working within what you're doing and how you're singing and what you're playing. So when you find yourself taking a solo, if you're aware of where you are in the chord and where you are in the scale, now you've opened yourself up to do some cool things, because you know that people expect, and now you can give them that, but you can switch it up a little bit, okay? And this is where breathing new life into some of this stuff starts to make kind of a cool impact. For instance, it goes back to the storytelling thing. If you expect the hero to save the world and get the girl and everything ends happy, you know, that's an expectation you might have halfway through the movie. But all of a sudden you're watching the movie and a huge plot twist occurs, and all of a sudden monkeys from outer space invade and take over the world, and all of a sudden credits roll at the very end. You probably want your money back, actually, because if monkeys from outer space invade that movie, I'm not a big fan. I don't like monkeys from outer space. But there's a plot twist that can happen that will develop the story in a place you didn't expect. The same thing can happen in music. If you take the same resolution and give them the satisfaction, give the audience or the people that are listening a delivery that they expect, but you can package it differently. Okay? And that might sound something like this. So instead of, that's what you would expect. Okay, and that's what we call a 5-1 cadence. And you hear that all the time. 5 for the Roman numeral, for the chord that's built on the fifth scale step, to a 1 for the Roman numeral, for the chord that's built on the first scale step. Okay? Or in this case, in the key of C, we're talking about G, C. Okay, G chord to a C chord. And you can hear that leading tone in there on top. Can you hear that? Okay, that's expected. Now, take the same thing, G, and we'll do what's called the deceptive cadence, which is when 5 goes to 6. Okay? Here's our B. For those of you who don't read music, this is our B right here. And this is where that hole is, B to C. Okay? What happens is, B to C, we still get it, but it's hidden within a different context. So instead of this, we get this. Okay? Which is a very cool effect. It happens all the time. I love it. And you get the resolution, but you get it in a different package. So it's still satisfying, it's just different. And now you've made a plot twist in your music and you have more of the story to tell. Okay? Questions so far?
Was
so
that an A minor that you went up to?
Did go, yeah, go to A minor. So in that case, so this is an A minor chord, or in the key of C, it's a 6 chord. Okay? Now,
what do you call that? It's just basically
5 to 6. In classical music, they'll call it a deceptive cadence because it deceives. You can have that's the most like notorious deceptive cadence. I don't know if notorious is the right word. It didn't really do anything wrong, but the most popular deceptive cadence is 5 to 6. You can have a deceptive cadence that goes 5 to what they call a flat 6, and you get, again, the same resolution, only you lower these outside bookends. Another cool effect sounds like this. Instead of this, you get this. same resolution, but now you said, hey, I'm going to tie up that little that conflict resolution. I'm going to tie that up, but while I tie it up, I'm going to introduce something completely different. So you have a resolution, but you also now have an expectation of, oh, going somewhere new. Okay? Now, when you start to hear those in your harmonies or in the melody, if you're singing a song that does some of those things, you can catch on to it and go, oh, okay. I know what that melody's doing. I know where it's going to go. So I'm going to come up with a harmony that can deliver on the same level. And that starts to become, I think, because I'm kind of like nerdy when it comes to that stuff, I think that's awesome. I'm a big fan. So I'm not calling you guys nerds, but I'm just saying I'm a nerd. Chase is a nerd.
Wouldn't that also be an eighth major?
Which one? The one I just went to?
Yeah.
It would be an A flat major. So for those who would like our, those of you who know the chords and how they work out, it would be a G major going to a flat six, so A instead of A minor, it's A flat major. Okay? All right, so that's a resolution of a leading tone to the tonic, to the one chord, okay? Or to the name of the scale. Let's see. If you have an idea of, like I said, where the melody's going and what is expected of that, then you start harmonizing with different chords and you play around with some of those expectations and what you hear, and you can do some cool things. Now, to do this, if we look at the variations of Jesus Loves Me, if you look at that, I'm sort of taking for granted a bit of an understanding of chords and how to wrap them up within the scale, but the idea is, if, again, even if you don't read music or not really a music theory person, keeping a melody in your head and then playing around on the guitar, finding a chord that has the tone that you're singing in it, or finding a tone that's closely, a chord that's closely related to the chord that's already written, those are great places to start. And that's exactly what we've done here in example one and example two. So let's look at example one, where in example one, we're going to take the melody of Jesus Loves Me, and like I said, the chords for that, we're operating in an F major scale, and the chords for that, if you look on the back, should have had this laid out a little bit differently, but on the back, the F chord, the very first chord you see, has an F, A, and a C in it. In a traditional harmonization of that melody, that's exactly what you'd have for the first part. Right? You'd have that would all be over an F chord. Okay, but as you can see, the first chord that I have, I'll tell you what it is, or you can go back and look, but it's a D minor chord. You don't have to worry about the seven. It's a D minor chord, where if you look all the way across on the second side where the F major scales are laid out, you can see that I know it was supposed to be an F chord, but I chose D minor. Why do you think? Yeah, it's two of the same notes. It has an F and an A. So you can see that the D minor chord has two common tones, as the same as the two common tones with the F chord. So I thought, well, that's a good place to start. I'll do that because it has two of the same notes. It's not going to be too drastic. You can sing the exact same melody. It just provides a little bit different feel. Okay? Now, what you need to decide is, does that work for what you want to do with the song? Because, as you can see, a D minor, if you, for you note readers, a D minor has D, F, and A. The melody starts on C. So the melody actually isn't in a D minor chord. It's outside the chord. But that's why I put the D minor 7, because that's where we get that 7th from is implied. We're not going to talk about 7ths and 9ths until probably the next class. But once we get past the C, we drop down right into where the A is. Okay, and that is part of the D minor chord. But if you like that sound, I was playing around and go, I can live with that sound. I like it. I thought, I'm just trying to change it up a little bit. I'm not going for radical. Radical is a little bit more example too. Okay, I still want this to be in the key of F. I want to borrow from the same chords that are, I want to use these chords that are on the scale sheet here. Okay, I don't want to go outside of that yet. So because of that, I'm going to use that chord. And that's where we get the first one from. Now the next chord I went to C. Because there's a G there. Okay? And at that point, I started creating, for you bass players, D, E to F. So there's a line in the bass that goes D, E, F, while the melody comes down. Okay? And you get sort of that. Okay? And it creates a nice progression that you can just lay that melody on top of. Now again, if you're like, ah, oh, it's not really what I'm going for, I'm supposed to be a little bit more happy right now in the part of the service, so I'm not really, I don't want to start with D minor. That's totally fine. We're going to talk about some, on the back of this page, you talk about some other options that you can come up with, and we can come up with some different options to harmonize that first chord with. Okay? But you can see, all I was trying to do in this first example is just change it up a little bit, just to give it some different color, some different tones. Maybe you're coming off sort of just a real worshipful song, and it kind of ends in sort of an intimate sort of minor sound like that, then you can flow right into it, and it's a nice little progression to get you started into that. But again, it's the exact same melody, so your congregation doesn't have to do anything different. They just sing what they sing. But it's going to sound fresh in their ears because it's brand new. Okay? Now, as we go through, I'll just play through it, and you can hear some chords are going to be the same, and some chords I've switched up to just give it a little different color. So we have a
Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so. Little ones to him belong, they are weak, but he is strong.
Okay, at the very end, tied back into what I opened with a D minor, C over E to F. Okay? Now the only reason I got to those chords to change it up was, again, looking on the back and going, okay, I have a C in my melody, I have a G right there in my melody, what chords can I use that might complement that? Okay? And if what I played didn't work, I'd find another one. I could have used G minor at some point, like where it says B flat in the third measure. I could have used G minor, but I didn't like the sound of it at that point. So it's kind of playing around. And everyone has different tastes. It's kind of like it's food, it's art. If you come in with an arrangement, there are some fundamental things that I can say, well, it's probably a little bit better to do something like this and something different. But a lot of it's just personal taste. So if you come in with something like I'm going to show you here in example two that's a little bit more out there, it might not be my personal preference, but it can completely work for what you're doing. And so, in example two, again, the exact same melody, but using more out there chords. So a lot of these chords you're not going to find on the back of that sheet. Okay? What I started to do is now borrow from other scales or from other keys. Okay? So instead of having, you know, a lot of them had two common tones in the first one. Now we might only have one common tone. Might not be any common tones with the chord, with the original chord. And they're going to be borrowed. Remember we talked about distant keys, and the more tones have in common with each other, the closely related they are. Well, if they don't have really anything in common as far as the notes go, then it's like the sixth cousin you've never seen in your life. Okay? And so you're not going to really use those very much in borrow from another key. Just a quick aside on borrowing, if you want to borrow, if you're in the key of C again, and you want to go to that sixth chord, that A minor chord, and you want to do that, okay? One way is you can borrow from you're ending up on what we call A minor, okay? And if you know your A minor scale, you can borrow from that scale to get you something like this. okay? And it drives you even further into A minor. It really says, hey, I'm going to borrow a chord and I'm going to pull it. It doesn't really work in this scale, but in this situation, the notes I'm going to use are going to drive me further into this resolution, into that A minor, okay? And so when you have an understanding of the 12 major and minor keys, you can start to pull. There's no law that says you can't pull. I'm going to pull from that one, and I'm going to pick from that one. And you put it in a context, and you might be really surprised with what you come up with. You might be like, wow, that's crazy. Okay? A lot of the gospel sound comes from borrowing, like, borrowing from other keys. Again, the key of C. You might be... And because of that, I'm just borrowing from distant keys, and I'm working my way closer and closer until I finally get back to C. Okay? So, in example two, what I've done is I've borrowed from other places, and my goal was to harmonize the note, not necessarily try to find a substitution of the chord. Does that make sense? Whereas in the first example, I was kind of trying to find a chord that maybe sounded similar, maybe gave it a little different color. Here, another approach is finding a chord that can harmonize the melody. I don't really care what the original chord was at that point. I'm just trying to find a different sound because I've played this 100 times and I'm sick of it and I want something new and different and fresh. Okay? And then you rap at that point with a little record scratch. I don't think I've ever heard Jesus Loves Me as a rap. But it's possible. You could do it. Does it rhyme? Yeah, kind of. So it works out. Okay. So in example two, I want you can listen to this and how different it is. And I wouldn't recommend recording this, but it's an example. It's definitely, you'll hear how the melody's the same, but it sounds different and it sounds colorful because I'm going tons of different places in just these eight measures. So it goes like this.
Jesus loves me. This I know, for the Bible tells me so. Little ones to Him belong. They are weak, but He is strong.
Okay. Same melody. It doesn't really end. It doesn't sound like it's the same melody at the end, but it is. The only difference is I wrapped it in a different package and I sold it as a B flat chord instead of what you normally would expect to be an F chord at that point. So, again, what I've done. Is decided to go, again, the melody, the note. First two notes, C, A. I'm going to use an A minor chord because that has both a C and an A in it. Cool. Alright, next chord. G over B. Because I wanted a G chord because I'm going to end up resolving that A to the G. Okay? Now, which brings up an interesting point, and you're going to hear this difference. When we play it the regular way, the word love sounds like it's going to... I'm going to play with the original chords, the F chords. And when you hear the word love, that third note, which is an A, it's going to sound like it belongs, like, part of the family. And the word me... is actually going to sound like it's kind of out of place, but then we come back into place on the word this. It's what they call a neighbor note. It dips down and comes back. But the word me should sound a little out of place, but then we come right back into place with the word this. Take a listen. All right, so the A sounds nice. It's home. We could rest there. And then we dip down for me and then this. Okay? So... there, the word love,
Jesus loves,
we could go home. Like, I could end the song there. But when I have the A in the second example, when I have the A in a different arrangement, you can't really end the song there.
Jesus loves me.
Now the me is home. That sounds like it belongs in the family. And the word loves sounds like it needs to go somewhere. Okay, so when you're taking a melody and you're reharmonizing and you're trying to come up with some different aspects, you don't have to think of the chord progression or the chords in the exact same way that they were, you can apply them at different points in the song or harmonize a different note of the melody. So in this case, instead of harmonizing the A on the word loves, I said, you know what, I'm going to harmonize the word me, and that word loves is going to feel like it has to go to me. Jesus loves me, and it has to go into me. Otherwise, it doesn't really feel complete. Are we okay? Okay, all right. So, looking over to... Well, first, let me just say this. About the example two, again, some of those chords, like D sharp, or D7 over F sharp, and then the A sus4, some of those things, only got those because I was looking at the melody and figuring out what chords I want to use. Wasn't thinking about what chord was in the original one. Okay, so two very different approaches. One is a chord substitution. One is a complete revamping of take me somewhere completely different. Okay? All the while being sensitive to where the melody, where those tones want to go. Did I have any leading tones that needed to resolve? Okay? Do I have any suspensions or anything that needed to resolve? Being careful of those. If you decide not to do those, not to resolve your leading tones or resolve your suspensions, suspensions are where you have that... things like that, yeah. A suspension, you're holding a note that's not in the chord, and then you're allowing it to go into the chord. That's a suspension and a resolution. If you can hear those and then know how to resolve them, how to break them, then all of a sudden your harmony lines, your solos become a completely organic, creative experience. You're kind of in the process and you're in the moment, okay? Good. Now, if we talk about a structure of a chord, and this is for people who play guitar, piano, bass, sing harmonies, anything like that. When you talk about the structure of those chords, or those triads, which you can see on the back of page two, you need to be aware when you're singing harmonies or when you are arranging for a choir, if you're dealing with choirs, if you're dealing with multiple guitar players or keyboardists or anything like that. You need to know what are the strong parts of the chord and what are the really potent parts of the chord. And the reason is because great music can be really hurt by poor arranging or poor understanding of what chords are important or what tones are important in the chord. So just real quickly to let you know that when we talk about a chord, like what we had here, we'll make this an A major chord. So if we have this, the bottom note is what they call a root, and that's the name of the chord. So if you have C major chord, C is the root. G major chord, G is the root. A major chord, A is the root. This middle one's called the third and the fifth. Now the root and the fifth of a chord are bookends. If I were to just play the root and the fifth, you would have no idea if I'm talking about a major chord or a minor chord. Okay? So, because of that, if I play that for you, you couldn't tell me if I was thinking major or minor in my head. Which sometimes has a cool effect if you want to keep it sort of mysterious or ambivalent. Okay? A lot of Gregorian chant, all the guys just come in with an open fifth, the root and the fifth, and then some other dude. Some other dude just goes and does a little melody in between it, right? Or lady, whoever's singing. But without that third, we don't know the color of the chord. So we need to know if it's major or minor, okay? So because of that, a little bit of a third of a chord goes a long way, okay? So if you're up there and you're singing some worship songs and you got some people singing harmony and... The melody note is, if you're aware that the melody note is the third of the chord, or if the melody note is, you hear it and you're like, okay, that's really defining the chord, it's really a colorful note in the chord, try not to have anybody else sing it, because you really don't need much more than you doing it or you singing it. If you're a bass player and you're playing, if it's like a C over E chord, or if you're a guitar player and you're playing the third of the chord in the root, you don't need a bunch of other people playing that as well, because it really just overdrives the sound, and then you get a chord that sounds kind of weird because there's too much of a good thing in it. Okay, so when you're arranging your harmonies, or when you're listening to what people are singing around you, if something sounds like kind of, it sounds good but it's weird or maybe too good to be true, they're probably not going to translate very well to the audience, because of that little bit of the third goes a long way. And that's for any color note. By color note, I mean anything that you hear as being a definitive to a sound of a chord, to that third, or maybe it's that seventh. Okay, anything that has a pull or a tendency to go one way or the other, those are things you probably don't want a whole lot of people doubling on. Okay, so when you're in a choir and you're arranging things, try not to let the third get out of hand. You don't need basses and tenors singing the third. Okay, if you're singing harmony with someone, try not to have too many people stacked up on a chord, unless maybe they're doing the root. You can always reinforce the root, you can always reinforce the fifth, but you don't really need to reinforce the third or the seventh. They're things that have a tendency to go one way or the other. Okay. Not only will it overdrive the chord, you're also talking about things that are kind of hard to tune as well. Okay. So you're going to find some tuning issues when you have a lot of people singing the third or a lot of people singing the seventh or things like that, because they're hard notes to get in tune, because they're outside of the chord in a sense, and they want to go somewhere. They're leading us to somewhere else, okay? It'd be like having a bunch of people recite the same story at the same time. It might get a little mumbled. So if everyone's singing a leading tone, it's probably going to sound a little bit muddy, okay? All right. Moving on to... Oh, any questions so far? Okay. So we've talked a little bit about reharmonizing. And if you look on the back of this page, we have the exact same melody. And what I want to do is just see, based on what the chords we have here, want to see if what kind of options we can come up with to do something a little bit different. Okay? Now you can look, even if you don't read music, you can see that the first note is in that third space from the bottom, and then the second space from the bottom is the next note. And you can find those notes in those spaces on those chords below. Okay? You can make a choice to harmonize every note. Or you can harmonize every measure, like the original one does. You can harmonize every two beats, like what I was doing before. Okay? So there's options of how often you want to put a chord in, but one thing is to take a look and see what are some choices that you might have. So let's just take a look at the first measure. Let's do one measure at a time. What are some options? If you look at F, G minor, A minor, B flat, C, D minor, E diminished, which is like double E minor. It's kind of a real creepy sound. To F major again. So those are the chords we can work with. What are some ideas we could put in that first measure based on common tones? It can be have one note in common, or it can have two notes in common with the melody in that first measure. So you can find something that has a C and an A. You could find something that has a C and a G. You could find something that has an A and a G, although there's not really one in our scale chords there. Anyone have any ideas or any place to start? There's no wrong answer, I'll be honest with you. At this point, when you're sitting down and you're looking at this and you're trying to come up with something new, everything's up for grabs. You sit down and you try and you play it and you go, I like the way that sounds. I don't like the way that sounds. And you just mess around with it. So what are some options we could put in that first measure? You can go with A minor, okay? Because the A minor has an A and a C. So the C, the first note of the melody, and an A, the second note of the melody. Okay? So we could do an A minor there. What else could we do?
C.
We do a C, because we have a C in the first note and a G in the fourth note.
Are we doing Jesus Lefty?
Yes, sorry, on the top. Okay, so we could do A minor in the first one, we could do a C. What else could we do? See any other common tones between the melody and the chords in the bottom? What's that? F. We could do an F. Again, two common notes, the C and the A, you also find in the F chord. Okay, now, if we start there, we'll play through these three options, and you can get an idea of, oh, they sound, they're going to color it differently, and they're going to make a different impact on the song. And if I went around the room, we'd all have different impressions of, I'd give it a 10 out of 10, I'd give it a 2 out of 10. Everyone's going to have different opinions on what, how they think that sounds and what they like. With the A minor, it just sounds like that.
Jesus loves me.
Okay, and then we have to go somewhere else. So that me is going to sound kind of funky until we decide what to do with it. Okay? But in the meantime, we leave the G hanging in the A minor, which is okay because we're going to resolve with the next measure. But that's how that opens. Okay? Now the C, what do you expect these A's are going to sound like? After, based on what we've kind of talked about, what do you think these A's on the word sus and loves? What do you think those A's are going to sound like? Where do you think they want to go?
B.
What's that?
B.
To B? Let's see.
B. G over B.
To G over... Like that? Okay. You could do that. And the reason is because those A's in the melody... Is there an A and a C chord? No. If you look in the... If you look and find the second space, note... You're not going to see it in the C chord. Okay? So what we have is the first note of the measure and the last note of the measure are in the C chord. Notes pull to where they belong. So you have a pull downward. Okay? Those A's are going to sink down into G. And then what he was saying, like what I did in example two, is if you know that, you can accentuate it by resolving that harmonically resolving the melodic resolution. So the melody resolves to the G, and then you can also take the chord somewhere else there to enhance that. But if we're just sitting on the C, all right, you can look at that and go, oh, those A's are going to pull down.
Jesus loves me.
And we can go home. That's the end of the song. Everyone loves it. People clap. Okay? Okay, and it pulls down into the chord tone. All right. Now the F, now we switch it again, and just like the A minor, the G is going to sound like it's left hanging. Because it's not in the chord. That the G in the melody is not part of an F chord. So it's kind of left hanging and in the balance, and it needs to go somewhere. Okay? All different sounds... all great, depending on what you want to accomplish with that song. Okay, so are you hearing some of these? The way the tones want to move, okay, and where these chords—the difference between the chord tones and the non-chord tones. Am I losing anybody with chord tones and non-chord tones? And you can let me know. Maybe I lost some of you guys like 5 minutes into class, and that I apologize. That's not my intent. But so
you always start on the root position.
Okay, good question. Good question. What he means by first inversion is like a slash chord. A lot of people call them pop. So it would be an F chord with an A in the bass or an F chord with a C in the bass. Basically, you take a chord and you put a different root third or fifth. You take the root out and you put the third or the fifth in the bottom of the chord. So instead of this, which is a nice solid root position, F chord, which means the name of the chord, F, is on the bottom. Okay? And you can switch that up by calling it what we call an inversion and taking the third, which is A, and putting that in the bottom. Or you can put a C in the bottom. Okay? Now, if this gets over your head for a second, we'll come back. But to answer that question, it's you can start off with any inversion you want. And you can go any place you want to go, but you have to understand that just like melodies and tones of the scale have tendencies, these inversions are also going to have tendencies, okay? So what happens is the first inversion is a lot less stable than the root position. The second inversion is the least stable, okay? And the reason is the second inversion really doesn't even want to stay there. It really wants to just go. And it wants to resolve right down. So a second inversion, an F, any chord over its fifth becomes the most unstable, and it really doesn't even want to be a chord as much as it wants to just be like a leading into something else. It's kind of like, I don't want to play this game. Can I just sit down? It's like the kid in the spelling bee, you know? Like, I don't really want to be up here. I'll spell it wrong the first time, and I'll sit down and be done, okay? This, anytime you put a third of a chord in the bass, that guy wants to play the game, but he needs help, so he's going to go somewhere else. He wants to resolve usually up or down. He's going to go to a chord above him or a chord below him, okay? So there's an instability there, but it's a tendency to go one way or the other, okay? This guy doesn't even want to play the game, but we use him to kind of launch us into somewhere. This guy wants to play, but he just kind of wants to be there and then go somewhere else. Okay? He wants to do his part, and then he hands off the baton. Okay? A root position chord, they'll run the whole marathon. They have no problem. They're there all day. Yeah?
Like you change one key to another between songs, you want to use 4 or 5 or something like that.
Yeah, you can. Yep, and what that does is... Right. Right. So, when you transition chords, when you transition keys, like what's your name, sir?
Tony.
Okay. So Tony's saying, when you go from one key to another key, you can create some instability by using some of these what they call slash chords or inversions, putting some different tones in the bass over under a chord, and listen to those tendencies, and they're going to want to go somewhere else, and it causes a nice modulation for you. Now, that is a little bit more of an advanced sort of kind of skill or understanding of how the chords are going to work. But, answer your question, great options, but you got to be aware of where they want to go. And again, knowing the rules is great. Breaking the rules is even better. Okay? Again, knowing what the audience expects is awesome. Because then when you don't give them what they expect, or you wrap it up in a different package, you just made a pretty cool deal. Okay? So if you know, again, where these things want to resolve, where the melody wants to resolve, and what these chords want to do, you find a different way to sell that or to deliver those resolutions, and now your melody has become fresh. Just like back on Jesus Loves Me, okay? That resolution at the very end of the second... example, he is strong.
He is strong.
All of a sudden, we've wrapped that up, and I've delivered that ending in a very different way, and it colors it very differently. Okay, it doesn't feel like it's necessarily. You don't feel like end of the song, perfect. There's really no sense of what the key is in that piece, but we've resolved it, and it gives a different flavor. But from there, I'd probably want to go on to somewhere else. Okay, all right. Good. So those are your choices for the first measure. Now, we're not going to do all these measures, but you can get the idea. If we went to the, let's say if you go to the third measure, we have D, D, F, D. Okay? What are some options you could harmonize that chord with, or that melody with? D minor, I heard. Okay, which is going to have all the notes in the melody are in the D minor chord, so it works out. So they're all common notes. Yeah, right. Okay, if you're going outside. An E-flat chord is going to give you no common tones, but it will give you a cool sound. It gives you all of a sudden, brings you into a jazz sound because you're dealing with sevenths and ninths, which we won't talk about here, but What that sounds like is. All of a sudden, it's like, yeah, right? Now, what you've done there is by taking a chord, a jazz chord, like that, okay, and you say, I'm going to harmonize it with, I'm going to harmonize the melody. I'm going to make those melody notes, well, what they call upper extensions of a chord, which gives you a jazz, gives you a jazz sound, okay? Now, again, it takes a little bit more studying your major and minor chords and what root, third, fifth, and then there's seventh, ninth, 11th, 13th, 15th, understanding those extensions. But once you start down that road, and I would encourage you, if you're like, man, this is kind of cool, I like getting into it, I want to know more, dig into a music theory book, dig into like a scales and chords book, and you can get a better flavor for how these things are made, how the songs are structured, how the chords are structured, why we use the scales we do. And then it's like, man, music just like opens up a whole new door. When I first started tinkering around with like composition when I was a kid, I would just be, you know, making stuff up. It sounded pretty much just like that, actually. But I was messing around, and my sister, who was a music teacher, she would always be telling me what I'm doing. I was like, I don't really care what I'm doing. I just like having fun. I'm making music. She's like, no, what you're doing is this and this. And I said, honestly, you can probably go leave me alone right now, because I really don't care what it is you have to say. I mean, I was in middle school, so I was kind of a punk, you know, because I knew everything at 13. But then when I got into high school, I was like, wow, I do want to take music theory classes. So I started down that road, and I just fell in love with music composition. But once I understood the relationships, like the things we talked about today with the relationships of the chords and the relationships of scales and common tones and how to take melodies and what tones want to have certain tendencies, once I understood those things, it really opened up a lot of doors, and my knowledge and understanding of the way music is structured, is built, really grew. Now, in your situations, in your churches, you're up there and you're playing music, or maybe you're writing worship songs, and maybe you're just trying to get a new life into some of these songs, or a new grip on a hymn or an old standard or something like that you want to do differently. Well, these are great tools to start with, about looking for common tones and figuring out, okay, if I sing that note while I play this chord, where does that note really want to go? You know, can I keep the melody the same? Do I need to change the melody? If I'm going to change the melody, then maybe I should pick a different chord, okay? And be listening for those relationships, all right? Now, I want to just take any time for you guys to just ask anything. If there's anything that I didn't cover or that I should have covered. Basically, I know just from talking to different people that kind of the number one thing is, man, I just really want to be able to have some options. I get locked into the same chords for the same songs all the time. I don't really know where to start. And so knowing the scales and a little bit of these common tones type ideas, that'll get you at least started. Finding the relationship of key signatures and majors and minors and things like that. But if there's anything specifically that you're like kind of struggling with this part, or I want to do this at my church and can't figure it out, is there anything like that? Anybody has any questions or anything they want to just hear covered at all?
Is there a book that you would recommend for beginning, something that's very simple, if you've never taken any theory classes, or you would recommend?
I don't know. I'm out of the reading game, but I'd be happy to check it out and get back to you. If anybody, okay, let me give you just my information, because I know that we're all coming at different levels, and it's kind of tough to maybe get everybody on the same page or up at the same speed. But if anybody comes across any specific issues, or if you want to try out some different things and send them on, whatever, then my info is this. And I can look for books or anything that you might that I might recommend to check out. My email. It's Jeff at inhisgroove.com. And I'm a composer that work on projects for like video games. I write music for video games and television and film and things like that. So you can go to inhisgroove.com and mess around if you want, but that's my email and that's my name, which is incredibly long, and I apologize for that. But if you email me and say, hey, you know what, I didn't really understand anything you were talking about at the class, but can you recommend a book? Or if you want to ask a question or you encounter something back at your church, I'd be happy to help you out. I'd be happy to offer any suggestions or at least point you in the right direction of where you can find some ideas or some different arrangements. If you have like bands, if you're dealing with a brass section or a string section, there's a whole instrument range issue that you are going to want to take under consideration. But most people aren't to that point where they are arranging for a brass section or a string section or anything like that. That kind of gets pretty complicated pretty quickly. But I don't know of a book off the top of my head, because I haven't like looked into it to see what's out there. But I know there's got to be some good stuff. If you are a piano player, I would just pick up a scales and chords books and just go through all your major minor scales and play the progressions. Yeah. And just be able to do those in all your 12 major and minor keys. If you're a guitar player, the same thing. Learn the scales and the different positions you're using and things like that. Any other questions I can help you guys out with? Yeah.
Can you just play right now? What questions do you call them?
You might call them progressions, or some people call them cadences. Those kind of things. They're like chord progressions. Those are just 1-4-1-5-1. And that's the progression of the back to the Roman numerals. So if you came to me and said, hey, Jeff, I wrote this song, and it's like just a 1-4-5 song, means it uses a 1 chord, a 4 chord, and a 5 chord, which those are back off the scale that we had. And it doesn't matter what key it in, what key we're in, we can play it as long as you tell me the Roman numerals. Okay, if you say, I wrote this song, it's in C, and I use these chords, I use C, F, and G, but I really want to play it in F sharp major. Okay, well now I got to figure out, F sharp major and C, what's their relationship, and then transpose the next chord, F to, that's a B major. But if you just say 1-4-5, then I can be in F major and I can think in Roman numerals. Okay, and most people, if you go and you bring them a song, and if they're thinking in terms of Roman numerals and you got to transpose back and forth, it makes it really easy. So that is a cadence of 1 chord to a 4 chord to a 1 chord to a 5 chord to a 1 chord. And those are the most popular chords in a scale, 1, 4, and 5. Right? Everyone loves 1, 4, and 5. The pop chords. Yes?
Is there any way to get away from diminished chords that you see a lot in the older hymnals? It's very difficult for me to find a chord that just works for
a suitable chord?
Yeah,
generally, what I would do is, when I see diminished chords, I run. No. when I see diminished chords, generally, what's going to happen is, it's probably implying a sort of 5-7 chord that you could work off of, okay? And if this is not making sense, don't worry about it. But for you, if you see a diminished chord, for example, if you see B diminished, B, D, and F, chances are there's going to be a D in the bass. But if you put a G in the bass, you've just made it into what they call a 5-7 chord. So it's a G7 chord. And it goes... So all you do is add the fifth of the scale, whatever key that hymn is in, below that diminished chord, and it should sound like it's a 5-7 chord. The other option is to see what the melody is, what the melody note is at that point, and come up with another chord that you may borrow from somewhere else, or that you may be in that key, and come up with another chord that may do the trick and sell it in a maybe more contemporary way. You might end up going to 4, like if your melody goes and it goes to diminished, you may go, right? You may go on a more pop progression, which they wouldn't have done back in the hymns. There's a lot of strict rules. Hymns are like, hey, 5 never goes to 4. A G chord will never go to an F chord. A lot of things they did because it was a rule back then. Okay, now, since the Beatles came along, we like to break rules, and what you can do then is approach it from a more pop standpoint if you want to contemporize it a little bit, like we did with the Jesus Loves Me on the second example, and you can go take the melody and say, okay, what's the melody note there? What's a chord I can put there that will harmonize that melody note and make that transition not so antiquated sounding? Does that make sense? So those are great ways to get around the diminished chord, is change it into something else or just go somewhere completely different. And
it just doesn't sound right on a string guitar. It doesn't sound right.
Yeah, it sounds goofy.
Yeah. Sounds like it wants to go somewhere, but it doesn't know where to go.
Well,
so just working on something.
Yeah, part of the with the diminished chords is because you have to resolve two notes in a diminished chord. You have to resolve the bottom note up and the top note down. So on a guitar, if you're not resolving it right on the guitar, it just sounds like, who cares about that? That didn't sound very good.
I just play it fast and move on.
You could just go, just all of a sudden stop, little a cappella section, and then back into it.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, exactly. So again, at that point, I would probably look at the second example and harmonize the melody more than I would harmonize the substitution chord, if you really want to break away and try something new. Anybody else? Okay. Thanks, guys, for your attention and for sticking with it. I know it's kind of weird. Appreciate it.